Welcome, everybody, to the Old Time Boxing Show on the Gruley Crew Sports Network. I'm your host for the Old Time Boxing Show, Mike Goodpaster, and I want to remind everybody to go check out the Retired Boxers Foundation, our main sponsor, on Facebook, Jackie Richardson and Alex Ramos. They do great work for retired boxers. Right now, I want to welcome in our guest, as always, my co-host, boxing historian Christopher Shelton. How you doing, Chris?
Good. Glad to do this. Just to start, there's a baseball cliche. Willie Mays is where triples go to die. So what we're doing today is Mark King is where morals go to die.
Yeah, that's true. And Don King will never die because he's the devil.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to look at terrible Tim Witherspoon today, a guy who did not have a long amateur career, to say the least. He had six amateur bouts, losing his last to Marvis Frazier on decision after getting knocked down. He made his professional debut with a TKO over Joe Adams, October 30th, 1979, and he was a guy that actually worked as a sparring partner for Muhammad Ali also, Chris.
Quite a few people, I think, they ran off the list, and he said he'd become a professional sparring partner, which I guess that's where he gets his experience and stuff, because he does come in, you know, with quite a few skills, and yeah, Ali's the biggest name, and Ali stuck with him sort of as a, if not a friend, a person that was kind of like an older uncle, somebody kind of looking out for him, sort of.
Yeah, and his first big win, or high-profile fight, he knocked out future world cruiserweight champion Alonzo Ratliff, after which he made a deal with the devil, Don King.
Yeah, that's an impressive win over the Ratliff, because he was like a long reach and such like that. But yeah, I guess Witherspoon said at that moment, you know, he's just starting to be high profile. He can hear distinctly amongst everybody, "Terrible Tim, Terrible Tim." It's the same voice coming at him, and he can't seem to avoid it. And it's Don King, and Don King starts offering you stuff, and nobody else is quite offering you anything. And doesn't get you title, but I can get you money, and sounds good, you know. You figure, even if you rip two off, so what? You get half of it or something, but it is a deal with the devil. And he regretted it, but he was stuck with it.
Yeah. And you look at this, Don King did work quickly for him, though. He beats Luis Acosta, and then he fights Ronaldo Snipes. Snipes had given Larry Holmes trouble, knocked Holmes down in a 1981 title fight.
That's right.
Yeah, and the win over Snipes puts him in position to have a shot. And the great thing about Don King was, kind of like today, it was, I think, June of 1982. He beats Snipes. He's ranked so he can get a title shot. So, we'll just wait a year and then fight Larry Holmes. But the Ronaldo Snipes fight, which he won by majority decision, is what really put him on the map in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, I did think Snipes won the fight. Witherspoon's involved in a lot of fights that seem to go the distance and wind up in a majority decision, split decision, and they are pretty close. I thought this one was a little less close. I really just thought Snipes outboxed him, but it is what it is, and I'm sort of glad, you know, Witherspoon gone, because when he faced Larry Holmes, it was a really great fight, and things are meant to be the way. And at that point, you got to, hey, Don King, look at the man. He's getting me a title fight, you know. A questionable win over a name opponent. So right now, Don King's the man.
Yeah, and King gets him a shot against Larry Holmes. And this is at a point, really, where I think Don King's just trying to make sure that he keeps control of the heavyweight division. Holmes is getting a little older. They fight Tim Witherspoon, who really only had the fights against Ratliff and Snipes. And for some reason, those two fights get him ranked number three. He gets to fight on a pay-per-view card against Larry Holmes. Holmes makes $2.1 million, which I'm sure he didn't make near that. And Witherspoon was promised $250,000. The interesting story here is the official debt. The reason Holmes says that he had trouble with Witherspoon, I don't know if you've heard this story before or not, but he had diarrhea when he woke up the morning of the fight. He said he got it because he ate a lot of corn and rice and steak. And that was after the weigh-in. He weighed in at 213, and he said he thinks that he lost a lot of his strength, and or left a lot of his strength in the bathroom.
I think that's I don't think it's a good analogy, but I'll say this for Witherspoon. for when he fought Ratcliffe. One of the interesting things, he gets off to a really quick start, and then he's sort of dominating, and he kind of fades out a little bit. And it's going to be a pattern throughout his career. When he really needs to do something, he's on. And when he has something, he kind of lets down. So Holmes was something he was really charged up for. And he set up a great defense. He basically had his defense just stuck right at Holmes' jab. I never realized how uncreative Holmes' jab was. Because he's just snapping that jab right into Witherspoon's gloves. Witherspoon's blocking pretty much every jab. And then when Holmes tries to go to the body, Witherspoon's waiting for it. He's countering, and countering brilliantly against Holmes. It's surprising either nobody else did it, or B, that Holmes didn't seem to adapt better to it. So some of the early rounds, it's sort of questionable whether you would even give the earlier rounds to Holmes and stuff, because he is throwing more punches and stuff, but really, Witherspoon's defense, specifically against Holmes, is terrific.
Well, my only problem is if you want to win the title, especially against a guy that's also owned by Don King, and he's been a champion for 5 years, you're going to have to take it more than what Witherspoon did in this fight. Because I think this, either way, I think it was a close fight. You had Herb Santos scored at 115-114 for Witherspoon. Manker scored at 115-113. Of course, Chuck Hassett, to me, is the guy that's butt off at 118-111. Because I could see a decision 115-113 either way. But 118-111 is more than a stretch.
I agree that I would give the decision to Witherspoon, but I do think that I can understand that it's pretty close. That ninth round, you know, Witherspoon has he simply holds on to this overhand right. He aims it, almost seems slow in motion because he's simply getting it built up. And Holmes, his style makes fights because Snipes was such a difficult opponent for Witherspoon, but Holmes liked to do his rope-a-dope, you know, be Ali, and that's not a good thing to do against Tim Witherspoon, because then he gets to lean against you and sort of wind up that overhand right and clock you, and boy, Holmes, you know, took two of those in the ninth round. It really looked like he's in big trouble. He didn't know, he's not going to make it out. He doesn't even quite know where he is. Holmes was brilliant in holding on. And then Witherspoon, it's tough to judge him or not judge him because, in retrospect, hey, he's not being aggressive enough in taking out Holmes. Then again, he wasn't experienced going into 15 rounds. Maybe it's not a good idea to get all your energy to take out Holmes, and what if you don't? It's a tough thing, but he certainly dominated Holmes from that point on, the latter part of the fight. And that ninth round is a terrific round, except it's frustrating and admirable that Witherspoon, with time on the clock, is being so patient and setting up his sort of technical game, because that's really impressive for a young fighter. Then again, you got Holmes dazed. Go for it. You know, there's two ways to look at it. And in the end, though, it's a tough, close fight. I thought would go to Witherspoon. It's not an awful decision. Holmes got to hang on to it.
I think this, though, I think if he goes after Holmes, what we saw from Holmes' career when guys like Shavers, who was a bigger puncher, and Ronaldo Snipes hurt him, when they went after him, they ended up getting hurt.
Yeah.
Because Larry Holmes was the kind of guy that even if you dropped him, it was kind of like you just woke him up.
I agree. That's why I do think that what if you go for this knockout and you don't get it, and you're not used to going to 15 rounds and such, and Holmes is. And Holmes had a lot of tricks in the
book. Well, it was only a 12-round fight, remember, because this was the WBC, and they had freaked out after the Dooku Kim thing and changed everything to a 12-round fight.
I swear it was 15 rounds. I watched quite a million times.
I think it was 12, wasn't it? That's why the score was like 118-111 and 115-113.
Check my damn notes. I've got my books here. I'm not trying to be right or wrong. I just want to get it right here.
I'm right, Chris. Don't worry about it.
All right. Well, you know what? I got LSU-12. All right, there you go. So it's on my notes.
All right.
Well, anyway.
After that, though,
go ahead.
He had some impressive wins, and one of his most impressive wins after that was he beat Floyd Jumbo Cummings, who he dominated. But then on the undercard of Michael Doakes and Harry Coetzee at the Richfield Coliseum, he knocked out James Quick Tillis in one round. And Tillis was a guy who went the distance with Weaver. He'd go to distance with Mike Tyson a few years after this. And to knock out Quick Tillis in any round, but especially the first round, was impressive.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Just the first person to go the distance against Mike Tyson. So he's a good boxer. If he wanted to just kind of stay up, you know, he was able to do that. And Angelo Dundee was joking. Now we know we call him Quick Tillis. You know, he took a fall and stuff. But it is an impressive win for Witherspoon. And it is he's not really an early round knockout artist, but he has a few of them, and that was one of them. And it was very impressive. And as close as he fought Holmes, either way, and Snipes, though I do think he lost against Snipes, he won the decision. He is somebody that's up there in the top, you know, three or something. And Larry Holmes, there's a growing suspicion that he's not trying to fight the best fighters and not going to give a Witherspoon a chance again, or Weaver a chance again, and that he's sort of taking it a little bit easy.
See, I don't think he was taking it easy. I think he was trying to screw Don King. I think he was just trying to cash out, make as much money as he could while screwing Don King over. I think that's why you didn't invite him, Doakes and Coetzee and guys like that.
He was also taking on these guys that weren't very experienced, like Carl Chief Williams. But again, he did like a Wishman. They gave Holmes a lot more than he expected, but they didn't have very many fights really going into a title fight. You sort of wonder, was it really right for them to get a title fight? Although when they fight so well against Holmes, well, then it seems justified, but it doesn't seem justified necessarily going in.
All right, next up, Larry Holmes, as we're talking about, relinquished the WBC heavyweight title. That's when he said he didn't want to fight Greg Page under the terms of a contract with promoter Don King. The contract called for Holmes to get $2.5 million to fight Page in February or March of 84. And Holmes said he would not fight him unless he came up with more dollars. He said that $2.5 million to fight him would end up with him getting about $1 million at best after Don King stole the rest. So I think right there, that comment will tell you. I don't think for a second Larry Holmes was worried about fighting Greg Page.
No, I agree. I agree that I'm glad we're going to be able to do this with the Don King situation and the mess, because we're trying to get it right with these guys. And it is a little bit difficult, but Don King certainly is a problem. And it comes to money and how he's distributing it. And Holmes can walk away from it. And in a way, you can call it a WBA or a WBC. It's the people that usually decide the heavyweight champion, or they did throughout history before these letters even came around. And Larry Holmes is undefeated, and somebody's got to beat him. You're right. Greg Page is you know, a fine boxer, but it wasn't Holmes avoiding him. There's too many people complaining about Don King, including Muhammad Ali himself, saying he got ripped off. And too many people are saying he got ripped off by Don King to deny this. But Don King had a hold, and it becomes a problem because in sports, you know, whoever won the Super Bowl, that's your champion. And in baseball, whoever won the World Series, that's your champion. Boxing, it gets a little more complicated. It's just at this point, Larry Holmes is still the heavyweight champion, but it does become a little bit more juggling act with boxing.
All right, since Holmes relinquished the title, that meant that Don King could throw his two highest-rated heavyweights that he had that were the property of Don King, Tim Witherspoon and Greg Page, together in Nevada, Friday night, March the 9th, 1984, and in a fight that I would say the word scintillating will never be used for, Tim Witherspoon won a majority decision. Jerry Roth won 17-111. Lou Tabbitt won 17-111. Chuck Minkers somehow 114-114. I think I had this like 116-112 for Witherspoon.
Yeah, I had just watching it. It's fairly close when all said and done. Page maybe appears to be doing it at best a little bit better, more boxing, not much. It's kind of even. But Witherspoon's landing harder punches, without a doubt. Nobody denies that. So I think. You simply have, you know, looking at it and watching all the rounds, saying, yeah, I would give it to Witherspoon and think that's fair. Page is complaining. He's being robbed by Don King, and we're trying to say when we think that's the case. I don't think so in this case. I think it was a fairly even and sort of boring technical. Technical can be really interesting and such, but this is going to be Don King's argument against Witherspoon and against Greg Page. Hey, these guys aren't bringing anything to the table. You know, the audience doesn't care about them. And largely, there's a lot of truth to that. But what are you going to do? Witherspoon's fighting the way he knows how. It's fine. It's not looking good against certain opponents. Not looking good at the boxer. It's just not, as you said, scintillating. And It hasn't happened yet, but the Mike Tyson thing is going to explode. And what people want is, you know, Jack Dempsey, you know, Sonny Liston. They want a quick knockout artist again. And these fights are going the distance and they're kind of dull. And I think Greg Page and Tim Witherspoon. Now, I do think Tim Witherspoon is an interesting boxer to watch, but lots of people at the time didn't think so.
Well, I think a lot of that was the people he was fighting. The style matchups were bad. He defends his title 5 months later against Penklin Thomas. This is cool because I got to interview almost everybody we're talking about today. But Witherspoon loses to Penklin Thomas by a majority decision, which Hal Miller, who scored at 114-114, must have come in and started judging about the 11th round. I don't know. Penklin Thomas, I think, won the fight early. I think Witherspoon did better at the end, but I think Thomas deserved a decision here.
I do too. And I don't even think this one's particularly close. And I have to, because we've been doing these guys, you know, I'm running over the same names and watching their bouts over and over. I've grown to have such a greater appreciation of Penklin Thomas than memory served me. A lot of times you're getting caught up in how he fought against Tyson, or he's on drugs, or he's not. You know, you get caught up in things. But at this point in his career, when he won the title and took it away from Witherspoon, deservedly, he's got a hell of a jab. And don't forget his right, though sometimes he seems to forget his right. But he was an excellent boxer at that moment. And it's unfortunate, you know, I've done drugs too. I understand it's easy to screw up, but it's too bad Penklin Thomas did that and screwed up, because he's an excellent boxer at that point. I think he defeats Tim Witherspoon fairly easy. It would have been very disappointing to see Witherspoon get the decision. And it's just because Penklin Thomas was such a great boxer at that particular moment.
Yeah, and Thomas, you got to remember about the time that he fought against Mike Tyson, also had an injured left shoulder and still fought the fight anyway. I'm not saying he would have won, but I think Penklin Thomas at 100% would have given Mike Tyson all kind of hell.
Oh, yeah, because he gave him trouble just for the six rounds that Tyson was having more trouble with Penklin Thomas for the first five rounds than I think he had with anybody.
Yeah, he lost a couple rounds in that fight. Yeah.
Yeah, he was struggling what to do a little bit.
Yeah. Then next up, in Buffalo at the Memorial Auditorium, and this was on the undercard of that classic Tony Tubbs-Greg Page heavyweight title fight, you had Tim Witherspoon knock James Broad. They used to call him Broadaxe. I used to like to call him Broadass because he weighed 261 pounds. And Witherspoon completely destroyed him.
Oh, it did. Not just destroyed him in two rounds. It looked like it was going to be a slugfest that was going to go a long ways. And Witherspoon aimed and launched that right. And that right, if he sits there and he plots it out, he tries to pin you, and then just wails it, and it either hits the side of the head or sometimes on the top of the head, and it makes you loopy because the boxers are loopy, and you better do something like Holmes or something and try to figure out or try to get out of there, do something. But Broad started getting hit and then hit and hit, and the referee should have stopped it, you know, about 10 punches before he did. Witherspoon, just this time he went for the kill and died, and he nailed Broad, you know, with looked like 20, 25 punches or something. It was in brutal punches. Witherspoon's a hard puncher, right and left. He aims at that overhand right, but the man could definitely hit.
Yeah, and then next up, he beats James Bonecrusher Smith, who he beat easily by 12-round decision, and this puts him back in play to get a title shot.
Yeah, and even the Bonecrusher Smith, it was almost, should the thing even go the distance? I mean, Bonecrusher seems so outclassed. He's getting beat up. He's not winning any rounds. Is it really necessary to take, because Tim Witherspoon's hitting him hard. Should the thing even go the distance? But it did. I guess, you know, Bonecrusher just survived it. But, yeah, it was a pretty easy victory for Witherspoon at the time, considering what would happen later. And I'll let you go.
All right, next up. He gets a title shot against Tony Tubbs. Tony Tubbs, who had beaten Greg Page in that classic Ollie Frazier-like first fight. I'm kidding, by the way. But Tim Witherspoon beats Tony Tubbs by unanimous majority decision. And this was a terrible fight. And Tony Tubbs came in at 244 pounds, which was 15 pounds heavier than when he won the title against Greg Page. Witherspoon tested positive for marijuana after the fight. the WBA fined him $25,000, which
Yeah.
really sucks because
Brutal.
he only made $50,000. They've ordered him to give a rematch, but Tubbs cited an injured shoulder, withdrew, never fought the rematch. So, what the
it's
hell?
A little bit disappointing. The fight itself is actually pretty good and fairly technical. The problems are, first of all, the marijuana thing, that's the stupidest thing in the world. That didn't help, you know, Witherspoon with any advantage. But Tubbs looked very impressive as a boxer with his footwork and stuff and his hand speed against Page. And he didn't look as sharp against Witherspoon. So he still was interesting enough that you had sort of a stylist battle, but it was technical when maybe it shouldn't have been as technical. Maybe Tubbs should have been a better boxer and done better, but either way, he had the same thing. He was undefeated, and all of a sudden, everybody's his friend, and he came way overweight, and that's it's so easy for people like us who struggling for whatever to say, this is your chance, this is your opportunity. Don't blow it. And we're going to be doing an interview today where so many times the person blew it, you know, where they sort of had everything. And so Tony Tubbs doesn't really have a reputation.
Yeah,
that's
the story. That's the story of the 1980 heavyweight division. There was guys that were really talented that just for some reason were not disciplined enough to be great fighters. And Witherspoon has, instead of the rematch with Tubbs, actually goes to Wembley Stadium, fights in front of 40,000 people against Frank Bruno, and he shows up 15 to 20 pounds over his normal weight. But luckily, he's fighting Frank Bruno, who's terrible. And that's for everybody in England that thinks Frank Bruno is good. This fight will show you that he wasn't, because Tim Witherspoon was 235. When he won the title, he was 220. And he actually, at his highest weight, wore out Frank Bruno and knocked him out.
Yeah, actually, this is one of those that, because we do it for the interview and watch it again, my perceptions were changed. I you know, you don't watch these every, you know, there's a million boxing bouts. Which ones you watch over and over again? I'm not going to, this one didn't seem like, the, you know, just like, wow, real impressive Witherspoon. The only time he ever came into a bout as champion and won. But Witherspoon really doesn't look very good throughout the bout. He doesn't look like he's really ready but Bruno's not really taking him out. He's scoring and such like that. And then Witherspoon, Bruno nailed him, and Witherspoon nailed him right back. And this time, Bruno went down. And it's fortunate that Witherspoon still has the power and the ability to take out Bruno. But as you said, it's Bruno, and so these things aren't given the kind of weight. And it's even sort of questionable because you always hear that Witherspoon is a 2-time champion, but champion still is Muhammad Ali, you know, those kind of people. And it feels like the term champion is being weakened by all these people beating each other when they're out of shape and not at their best, and using the term champion, that it's almost cheapening it to a certain degree, and Holmes getting older and such like that. So the 80s are sort of disappointing with about 20 champions, yet we don't think about too many of them as being as good a boxer as they really are. You know, Tony Tubbs is a good boxer, Witherspoon's a great boxer. You just don't remember them because they came in big fights, you know, not prepared, overweight, and disappointing.
All right. Now, Witherspoon was scheduled again to defend against Tony Tubbs, who withdrew, citing a shoulder injury. And against Tim Witherspoon's wishes, James Bonecrusher Smith was the guy who was substituted. And I think the reason this was against his wishes, and I interviewed Witherspoon about 5 years ago, was because he had been training for Tony Tubbs' style, which was completely different than Bonecrusher Smith. And Bonecrusher at the opening bell ran out and just started throwing punches because I don't think he wanted to get embarrassed like he did the time before. Witherspoon was 2 pounds lighter than he was against Bruno, but he was still out of shape. And Bonecrusher Smith gave Witherspoon an ass whooping in this fight.
It went quick in the first round, and already Witherspoon and Don King are having a nightmare relationship, because even before the Bruno fight, Witherspoon said he wasn't going to fight a couple times, and he said, "I'm getting ripped off. This guy's not paying me." There's a lot of problems, and Don King's bad mouthing Witherspoon. Goes, "This guy's a million problems. He's got a bunch of problems. You know, a bunch of people around him who are in his ear. They aren't looking out for his best interest." And so there's problems galore as Witherspoon comes in with a lot of problems on his mind. everybody talking in his ear. He's overweight. And Bone Crusher Smith just steps in and just starts beating him for the first punch. Witherspoon had never gone down. He went down 3-4 times. One knockdown wasn't called a knockdown, but it was. And knocked out easily in the first round. Now, Witherspoon would say later, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. I was so happy to be free of Don King. But there's problems on all sorts of fronts that it damaged Witherspoon's reputation as far as a legacy and such. And then Bone Crusher Smith winning. The winner gets to fight Mike Tyson. And, you know, love to see Witherspoon versus Mike Tyson. And Bone Crusher Smith, after beating Weaver and Witherspoon in one round, and it's starting, you know, have something that you could admire, the most embarrassing title fight against Mike Tyson of all time, just embarrassing the way he hid and ran away from Mike Tyson. So this was, and that's how I remember Bone Crusher Smith, and a lot of people remember him. And it's just, again, it's one of those things that I guess you got to give Mike Tyson credit that there's all these disappointments.
I don't, because I think that it showed the limitations of Mike Tyson, because Bone Crusher Smith didn't run from him. He basically just grabbed him the whole fight and hugged him.
Oh, yeah.
And Tyson never
once. Well,
he did
run from him. I think he did. He wiggled around the ring a lot.
You know what I mean. I mean, he was unable.
He is a big guy. If he doesn't really want to get knocked down, he's going to be a tough guy to knock down, and Mike Tyson couldn't. Mike Tyson didn't even try, sort of, you know, at a certain point. He just sort of, this guy just giving it to me, and the fans are booing nonstop, and it's disappointing for everybody because Bone Crusher Smith loses his reputation, Witherspoon loses his reputation, Paige, Tubbs, and all of them sort of get mixed together, Tinkle Thomas, even though they're all different kinds of boxers. It's just kind of a jumbled mess that it looks like, because they have this unification, Mike Tyson solved the problem. Now we got Mike Tyson and Michael Spinks, and that's it. But it might have given Tyson too much credit, because he was beating these are talented guys, but they're also a little bit of a head cases and messes, and eventually you have other heavyweights around the bend who could either get it together that day or had it together in general than the 80s people.
All right, then after the Bone Crusher Smith loss, which cost him his title, he beat Mark Wills, he beat Mike Williams, who was undefeated at the time, and if you remember, Mike Williams was the guy who played Union Kane in Rocky V. The interesting story about Mike Williams is he was supposed to get a title shot against Tommy Morrison. He was supposed to be the guy that Tommy Morrison fought when he ended up. Who was the guy that he fought that they pulled out of the crowd, Chris? Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Oh, come on, Chris. You're supposed to be our boxing historian.
Hey, I watched the fight. I know he took out Chillis, which is his big name.
Well, it was the fight after Tommy had beaten George Foreman to win the title. Mike Williams was who he was supposed to fight next. And Mike Williams in the locker room refused to come out for the fight. They were fighting in Kansas City. And they ended up, there was a guy who, his name slips me right now, who was sitting in the crowd drinking a beer, who was a professional boxer, who actually ended up getting the title shot. But Mike Williams also, I believe, he lost to Buster Douglas on the undercard of Tyson Spinks. But Witherspoon only beats him by a split decision, still out of shape. And then in 1989, one of the greatest knockouts you'll ever see, he knocked out Anders Eklund, who I think was from Sweden. And the interesting thing about that is, have you ever seen the movie The Great White Hype?
Yes, I have.
Okay, and remember, they're looking for a white guy to fight whatever the name of the heavyweight champion was in there, because they needed a white guy to make money. And they actually showed this knockout with Witherspoon knocking out Eklund. And I don't know if you've seen this knockout before.
It was pretty impressive.
He looked like he almost rearranged the guy's face. And then he beats Jose Ribalta by majority decision. And then he gets a shot against Carl the Truth Williams, who he beats by a split decision. Now, if he was still run by Don King, he'd have a title shot coming up next. But he's not.
Yeah. I'd like to throw in my own just 2 cents on that. When he fought Mike Williams, which was just a couple fights after Bone Crusher Smith, he still looked like he might be a player in the scene. But even after that victory, he suddenly dropped from the scene. That fight against Bruno, the numbers are just awful. He's fighting in England as a champion. Bruno gets $900,000. and he gets $90,000, and Mark King gets $250,000 as the manager, and facing Bone Crusher Smith. Mark King is the manager for both fighters going into a championship fight. And so Witherspoon's now caught in this legal mess and feeling sorry for himself, and he had a right to feel sorry for himself. And Don King's now locking him out of all his fighters. So Witherspoon is just sort of disappearing from the scene as opposed to losing fights. Yes, the Carl Tooth Williams fight was a decent fight. Williams has a good jab. He gets good efforts, but Witherspoon deservedly won. At least it's somewhat high profile. You know, Williams had only lost three times at that point. But Witherspoon just sort of, because now there's just Riddick Bowe coming around, and Lennox Lewis is around, Evander Holyfield's around, Michael Morris. It's just a lot of guys that are showing up and around, and Witherspoon is just falling off the radar in this lawsuit with Don King. That Don King, you know, deserved to get. I mean, Mark King's a punk. You know, he's a coward. Don King's a criminal, a rotten person, but at least he's a worker. You know, you see him and Don, it's him and Donald Trump at all these things. And it's just interesting to see King on hyperactive drive looking for the money while Donald Trump shows up late and only interested in the power and the kind of stuff. But a lot of these boxers are victims, and Witherspoon was unhappy being a victim. And so he really had to go after Don King as best he could. And I'm only picking on Mark King so much because he basically just, you know.
You could pick on Carl, too. All the Kings are scum.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, what are you going to do if your dad offers you a lot of money to do nothing? Or just
I'm going to say, okay, daddy.
Yeah, I'd like to think I wouldn't, but $250,000 sounds pretty good.
Why would you not? You can get $250,000 to go out and do something also. You don't have to just sit on your ass. But then
that's true.
You know, and then it looks like Tim Witherspoon's career has come to an end. He loses to Everett Bigfoot Martin. Now, Bigfoot Martin's a guy 17 and 14 at the time. He was a decent fighter, but he loses there. And that leads to the next 4 years of fighting to Sherman Griffiths, the Nathaniel Fitches of the world. He gets a shot against Al Cole at Madison Square Garden, upsets Al Cole, and then he fights Jorge Luis Gonzalez, who at the
time... And he is free king by this point.
Yeah. And he fights
and
Jorge...
Now he's going to Madison Square Garden. He's done 5.5 years without a, with only the, I think the, without a loss. And then that was 6+ years with only the one loss because the Don King thing really was a mess. So you're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because Don King controlled most of the division. But Jorge Luis Gonzalez was a Cuban amateur who was a great Cuban amateur. He was a terrible professional. He got his ass beat up by a lot of people. And Tim Witherspoon was one of the first guys to expose him to the whole world. And this was on the undercard of Bo Galata 1. And I think the other fight on that card was Evander Holyfield and Bobby Chaz. But he just took Gonzalez apart.
Yeah, he did. Gonzalez was exposed. You know, Gonzalez didn't actually have anybody for several of the fights prior. He was listed as a manager or trainer of any kind. This time he did. But it wasn't a boxer as a trainer. It was a person that did some other sport. And Gonzalez didn't really look like he had any kind of game plan against Witherspoon. And Witherspoon slowly starts to figure out, hey, what to do. And he does get this technical knockout in the fifth round, looking very impressive, beating up and knocking out Gonzalez. But it's really – I'm glad for Tim Witherspoon because – this was his night in a way. I mean, Evander Holyfield's night too, but it was an impressive and Lennox Lewis's night against Mercer. But just an impressive victory. Tim Witherspoon now at least was back on the radar again, free of Don King. He's older now though, quite a few years. And but yeah, that was really his night, and just good for him. I like him, Tim Witherspoon, a lot. I just get disappointed, not because people could be disappointing me too, but this time he has something to prove. He's such a better boxer than when he's looking good. When he's looking good, then he's got to undermine it sort of. But maybe I do that too. I just undermine it with a lot less money involved.
Yeah. And then he fights Ray Mercer. And this is a fight where I actually thought Witherspoon won the fight.
I did too. I felt he won the fight too. It was a close fight. It was a good fight. A good slugfest. These guys are hitting each other hard. They're mostly staying in the center of the ring. I understand the sentiment for Mercer because Mercer was really high profile with two losses against Evander Holyfield and Lennox Lewis. But held great fights. And some people thought he won certainly against Lewis. Some people thought he beat Holyfield. I didn't think he defeated Holyfield. No way. But there was sympathy for Mercer, and that the judges were against him. So I don't know if that influenced anything, but it was impressive because when I saw the fight again, just not too long ago, because we did Mercer, I sort of thought of Tim Witherspoon already in this sort of spinning cycle of losses, but he really hadn't. He only had four losses going into that fight because he had disappeared for so long that he even disappeared off my radar and stuff. So what had happened to him? I knew he was in a Don King, lawsuit from mess. But it was a good fight. I do think Witherspoon won, but ultimately, I guess it's not life or death because when he very shortly after that, he didn't look good at all and looked like he should be seriously thinking when Jimmy Thunder and stuff, he's seriously thinking about retirement.
Yeah, and the Larry Donald fight, I think he looked really lethargic. He lost to Jimmy Thunder, who was a guy with a big punch, who at one point was a huge star on Tuesday night fights. He loses to Andrew Golota. He lost to Brian Nielsen in Denmark. Lost to Greg Page in a rematch in 1999. Yeah, so his career was pretty much over here. But every once in a while, in those last 5 or 6 years, he would show you what he used to be. I mean, he, the Darryl Wilson fight, who he knocked Darryl Wilson out, who was a fringe contender. Ahmed Abdin.
Who knocked out, knocked out Shannon Briggs.
Yeah.
Big guy.
Yeah.
And then a second round knockout. But I mean, this guy's, you knocked out, put some exclamation points on it.
Yeah.
I was seriously, when he hits the ground, now I already know he's going to lift, but if I'd watched it live, I would have thought this guy, this is going to be serious brain damage and stuff. I mean, he's looking really bad after the knockout by Witherspoon. And Witherspoon still has that right. And this time he's, what had happened in his last few aging years, is the overhand right, maybe because of something, had turned into basically he was doing it now really over the top, almost clubbing somebody over the head with it, and that's what he did. So now instead of getting hit at the side of the head, which just right now, if you're listening, hit yourself to the side of the head. It hurts, let alone Tim Witherspoon doing it. And if you get hit to the top of the head, it makes you loopy. And this guy's the second time it happens to him, he's not just loopy, he's gone, he's out, he's. He looks like, if I were watching it live, I'd think, this guy, get this guy to a hospital now.
Well, and I think when we look back at the heavyweights of the 80s, guys like Page, Tubbs, Witherspoon, these were all really talented guys that I think a lot of their issues was concentration, which means Don King, where they weren't really always concentrated on what they had to do in the fight. They were just trying to keep their hand on their wallet. So when their money got stole, they might be able to stop it. And Tim Witherspoon to me is a guy who, if he's not treated that way, by 1986, I think he's the heavyweight champion of the world. And I don't know that if a completely right Tim Witherspoon in the style he fought, I'm not so sure Mike Tyson beats him.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. It's tough because Pinklin Thomas, is in top form. The guy that fought Witherspoon, I'm not sure Mike Tyson beats Pinklin Thomas.
Well, hell, Tony Tubbs, if he weighed 220 pounds, that dude could flat out box.
One thing's for sure, if you were preparing, if you spent time training and preparing to fight Tony Tubbs, nothing could be weirder than hearing there's a switch. It's Bone Crusher Smith. Size, style, speed, everything. Couldn't be more different from one man to the other. The Tony Tubbs just looks like a real stocky. He looks stocky, not that, but he looks small and stubby. While Bone Crusher Smith looks like a tall machine.
Well, how about this though? If you're a great fighter, you just don't give a damn and you overcome it, though.
That's what they did. That's what happens. But that's why you got to give Larry Holmes the credit that we have been giving to him. And the frustration is that. He comes up with a way when things go wrong, when he's underprepared, when he's not having his night, and it's his fault too at times, or the opponent, he starts coming up with stuff. Even things like maneuvering to his corner at the round end so that he gets the full minute and the other person gets about 48 seconds or something. A lot of little things, the tug, the hold, the rope-a-dopes, the few landing a couple punches back. Holmes comes up with everything to win in a way that doesn't seem as – the other ones don't seem as impassioned. Let me shut this stupid thing off. Hold on.
You got your vibrator on, Chris?
Thank you. But the other ones, that's what you're right in the sense that these other guys don't seem as impassioned as Larry Holmes. Holmes doesn't want to lose when he's got that undefeated record. And when things go wrong, he pulls out anything in the book and comes up with new stuff. And the other guys don't. They either have a great night or they're not quite ready that night. Or Witherspoon loses concentration within a bow and then pulls it together within that same bow.
All right, Chris. So you ready to wrap this up? Or you got something else you want to talk about with him?
No, just that I do believe that Don King only has a point that if the fans aren't interested in, because Tim Witherspoon won the supposed first heavyweight title of two, really, they were still saying, is this guy really a heavyweight champion? No one really believes it. Is anyone interested in seeing him? He doesn't seem to have a fan base. And Don King's saying, you know, that causes me problems if the guy brings nothing to the table. Nonetheless, Don King's has killed two people.
That we know of. Well, my guess is it's probably higher than two.
He's killed two that we know of, and Mark King's only killed his own soul.
Yeah, well, they've all killed their own souls. So who do you want to do next? Do you want to do Boom Boom Mancini?
You bet. I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, since we're going to be locked down in quarantine, can we do the show sooner, since all you're going to be able to do is sit around and watch fights?
Yeah, you're right, because we are in quarantine and stuff. It is pretty crazy. But I still would like, I really want to make sure I have, you know, everything on it. I can make, like, you know, instead of 14 days to 7, like 10 or something like that, if you want to do something like that.
You're such a sissy, Chris. I could do it right now, but all right.
I like to do everything again because of perceptions, though I will say, I watched the Holmes-Witherspoon fight a million times, and you just did it on memory, and I still thought it was 15 rounds, and you knew it was 12.
Yeah, I don't forget things that I saw when I was younger. I can't remember anything that's happened in the last 20 years, though. That's why we do an old-time boxing show.
Right.
All right, so we'll do Ray Boom Boom Mancini next. Right. Chris, whenever you're ready to do it, just text me and we'll do it. But for now, I want to remind everybody to follow the Grilling Truth at Grilling Truth on Twitter. And check out all of our shows on iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, Spotify. Wherever you find sports podcasts, you'll find The Grueling Truth. So for now, for Chris Shelton, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.